action feeds it to pass in zone. Yes, touchdown to Greg Olsen. Wilson just got it away. There's Keith Lee. Touchdown, Carolina.
Hello and welcome to the Keep Sounding podcast. This is Brian, joined by John as always. John, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Brian. How are you?
Oh, I'm all right. I would be happier if the Panthers won on Sunday, though. Which, it was still an entertaining game. It was.
Yeah, I thought Sunday's game was as maybe, like, I don't want to be that guy that, like, roots for losses, but, like, in hindsight, Sunday might have been an ideal game, I thought.
I don't root for losses. It's one of those things where it's almost both situations are good. Like, if I get to watch an entertaining football game and they still lose, it's like, okay, their draft position's better, but at least I got to watch an entertaining football game. Like, I would have been extremely happy if the Panthers won, but they didn't, which is going to be better for their draft position. Shockingly, they're still in contention for the NFC South, though. They're only two games back, which, you know, stranger things have happened in this division. I mean, there's the 7-8-1 season that is Brad's favorite.
It's so funny to me that coming into Sunday, if the Panthers won the game, they would be first place in the division as we speak right now. But instead, because they lost, this single game, this one game, had a swing between leading the division at almost the halfway point of the season and sitting at the third pick in the draft.
Yep. So the Panthers, was amazing.
Yeah, Panthers win, they are in first place in the NFC South. Panthers lose, they pick third in the draft.
Best place to be in, yeah. I've shared a fan shot of that on Facebook and on CSR before the game started, actually. So it was only fitting that the Panthers made it as close as they possibly fucking could, to the point that they basically should have won the game but still lost.
Should have won it twice.
Yeah, they had two different chances to win. One of which was a shoe-in. Yeah. Yeah. But P.J. Walker had himself a 300-yard game. When's the last time that a Panthers quarterback had that? It's been a while.
That'd be Sam Darnold in, like, week three of last year, I think.
Playing the Texans. Yeah, that makes sense.
I think he might have done it against the Cowboys, like, the last good quote-unquote game he had before he, like, turned the ball over a few times in the second half against the Cowboys and then forgot how to throw a ball.
Forgot how to be a quarterback, turned into a pumpkin.
Yeah, I think he got 300 in that game.
Yeah.
Yeah, he had 301.
But I would have been, if someone had sat there and said P.J. Walker's going to have a 300-yard passing game for the Panthers in the preseason, I would have laughed at them.
Like, why is P.J. Walker even playing?
Yeah, he was the fourth string quarterback. The fourth string quarterback, John.
Yeah.
Behind Sam Darnold, Baker Mayfield, not in that order, obviously, Matt Corral, and him. He wasn't even going to make the roster, and all of a sudden he threw 300 yards against a pretty competent Falcons team. I mean, their defense isn't great, but they're 4-4, which is pretty good for the NFC this year. They're just a scrappy team that makes almost every game competitive, and yeah. He threw for 300 yards. Dante Foreman again rushed for rushed for 118 yards. He did the exact same yard total last week, and he scored 3 touchdowns. So fuck you, Matt Rhule. Yeah, it's one of those things where, like, the longer that the Panthers are removed from Matt Rhule, the more I'm like, oh man, he was an idiot. Like, Foreman only had averaged what, 1 to 2 rushes per game during the Matt Rhule era of 2022. And yeah, now he's getting.
Yeah, because it was after the 49ers game, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Foreman had 7 carries in the first 4 games of the season.
Yeah. Now he's getting.
He missed a game in there. I don't remember if he was hurt or if he just didn't get on the field.
I think he just didn't get on the field.
So he had 5 touches through 5 games. Seven touches through 5 games, yeah.
the Matt Rhule-led Ben McAdoo era was very much just cram the ball down Christian McCaffrey's throat or have Baker Mayfield throw 40 passes a game. So I don't know what it is, but the offense looks good. Maybe it's the offensive line gelling, but Dante Foreman, and I think this is one of those things with running backs that is kind of lost in translation with backups, but running backs tend to need a few touches to really get into a rhythm. And Foreman seems to be that guy, which is good because, you know, now he is that guy for them. So,
yeah, I mean, he's a big boy, and I think that those tend to be the ones that anecdotally seem to be more effective later in the game after teams get tired.
Oh, yeah, he's a power runner 100%. And this is a power rushing offense 100% as well. I mean, now they've really gotten back to doing that. And it's shocking to me that their offensive performance is so much better without McCaffrey, but I guess that's just what this offense is designed to do. I mean, their offensive line is a lot of decent run block or really good run blockers between Ike Mukwonu, who was, by the way, is still continuing to be the best ranked PFF offensive tackle of this season in pass blocking. So, but also a good run blocker. Obviously, Bradley Bozeman, that's more his style, and Taylor Moten, always good at that. So, but after an interception return, oh, go ahead.
I think Christian McCaffrey might be one of those guys that makes coaches stupid.
Yeah, that was something that I brought up in the Slack chat. It just seems like Christian McCaffrey makes people overthink things. Like, you have other offensive players. I mean, Terrace Marshall, Dante Foreman, hell, even Tommy Tremble have all had much better performances and really shown out when without McCaffrey, which is sad because if he was here and they still did that, it would probably be better offensively. But I digress. But yeah, the Panthers had themselves a pretty slow moving first half. The first half ended with the Panthers leading 10-7. And that's when everything kind of went nuts in the second half. So Panthers start the first half or the second half with a field goal. Then the Falcons score a touchdown after two punts. Then the Panthers score another touchdown with Dante Foreman Deontay Foreman. I have no idea how to pronounce his name even to this day still.
Yeah, I looked up pronunciation and it was Deontay.
It is Deontay. Okay. I think you told me that last week. It's just one of those things that doesn't get in my head.
Stubborn. Yeah. It's yeah. Okay.
But yeah, touchdown, then a field goal, then another touchdown by Deontay Foreman. Then another touchdown by the Falcons with Demir Byrd of Panthers fame. 47-yard touchdown. Panthers tried to continue the momentum. Instead, they got negative 7 yards on the next drive and turned it over on downs. Field goal by the Falcons. That put the Falcons pretty much ahead to the point where the game was basically over. And then P.J. Walker uncorked a beautiful pass to DJ Moore with basically time expiring. I think there was only like 12 seconds left, maybe.
Yeah, it was like 12 seconds. There was.
Yeah.
But I think that is maybe you crack the code. What if you throw the Hail Mary the second to last play of the game before the defense puts like all their tall players and like camps out on the goal line? Maybe that might be the move.
Well, Walker did the one thing that Baker hasn't done all season, which was extend the play without just trying to run it. And Moore got behind the defense, which part of it was just that the defense really fucked up on that play anyway. Like, they should never have let him behind them. But regardless, I would have never expected PJ Walker to have the longest air yard completion in next gen stats history since 2016, I want to say, is when they started calculating that. Yeah. So then DJ Moore unfortunately ripped off his helmet, which is a bullshit fucking penalty because they do not enforce that consistently. But then, regardless, 15-yard penalty. Eddie Pinheiro had to attempt a 48-yard kick, which is not necessarily automatic in the NFL, but you kind of expect your kicker to make that. So he missed it. Falcons take over in overtime. five plays, interception by the much maligned C.J. Henderson. He brought it to the Atlanta 20, which you would think is another chance to be automatic. Panthers gain 6 yards. They go to kick a field goal. Pinheiro misses again. Falcons win the field goal, 37-34. Falcons, the Panthers lose, and now they are sitting at the third overall pick, potentially, in the 2023 NFL draft. And wow, was that a fucking roller coaster of a game.
Right. I think I want to start with, I do not have any animosity towards DJ Moore for taking his helmet off.
Me neither. No.
Like you said, I feel like we see that, and I don't know if it always gets called. And
no, it doesn't. It absolutely
also
doesn't.
Also, just like, I appreciate the moment because, you know, he's got a lot of like pent-up frustration with how bad this season has been for him. And to have like a big play and have such a key play, like to get hyped up, like I don't fault him for that.
I mean, that was the play of his life, like a 64 right. yard touchdown with like less than 15 seconds left in the game to tie the game up for the PAT. That might be the best career, the best play we'll ever see in DJ Moore's career. And it was all for naught because the Panthers were going to Panther on us. It sucks, too, because Zane Gonzalez probably nails that field goal, no problem. Like,
I was going to say, what you maybe think Scott Fitter or David Tepper, like, handed Eddie Pinheiro a note on the sideline? Like, hey, man.
Missed this field goal first,
left.
Real quick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially the overtime attempt. The overtime attempt was bad. Like, the extra point just kind of, like, leaked to the side and barely missed, but the game-winning field goal from 33 yards, he almost missed the kicking net or the net behind the field goal to catch the ball. Like, he pulled it straight left.
That's what I like to call the yips, which is a baseball term. I think that he was trying too hard to make the second field goal instead of just settling down and kicking it like a normal kick.
Yeah.
It also doesn't help that you're in opposing territory where the Falcons are, you know, at least halfway decent this year. So, the fans were definitely going to be a factor on that as well.
I was like kind of expecting him to be cut, which I'm kind of glad. I mean, I'm glad he wasn't. Like, not that he. It's just, I think it's always harsh when like one bad game from a kicker ends up getting them cut. But I think it's safe to say that Eddie Pinheiro is his seat is a little bit warm.
It definitely is. I mean, the thing that really sucks about it is, even if Pinheiro isn't doing great and, you know, he can't rebound from this, there's not a lot of kickers out on the market right now where you can bring them in and safely rely on them for a kick like that.
Right.
The 48-yard one anyway. So
yeah, the 48-yard one, whatever. The 33 one, the 33-yarder in overtime.
Love the fact that the Panthers find one kicker, he gets hurt, then they have to replace him like either right before the season or midway through the season. And then they find a decent one in Zane Gonzalez, who was very good last year, and then he gets hurt right before the season. They just have to scramble to find his replacement. That's always fun. I love that.
Yeah. We can't not a recipe for success. Yeah.
No. No, and like the offense did everything it could. I mean, if PJ Walker had that same moxie and performance in the beginning of the game, I don't think the Panthers would have been in that position to need to kick a field goal to win. I think they would have run away with this game, but Walker really struggled in the first half of the game. That's kind of to be expected from a fourth string quarterback. So, you know, it sucks, but it is what it is.
I have no idea like what happened with the offense in the second half. Like, why all of a sudden everything just clicked?
Second half adjustments, question mark?
I mean, we scored 21 points in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Alone, which I think is...
It's definitely the most we've had all season.
Third most points more points than we've scored in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of our games. Or as many or more than points we've scored in 5 of our games.
I really feel
we haven't scored 21 Walker. Points. We haven't scored more than 21 points in a game since week 3 win over the Saints.
And that was mostly defense creating those points too.
Right.
Like seven of those were points directly from the defense. Yeah, I feel bad for PJ Walker because I feel like this is a really good audition for him. And if the team like won maybe two more games, you'd be having the conversation of, is PJ Walker the guy? Where now I feel like it's just, he's not the guy, even though he's pretty good. I hope they retain him as a backup quarterback next year, but yeah. Who the hell knows, because he's not, because he was Matt Rule's boy and Matt Rule is gone, obviously. So, you know.
Yeah, I think he's definitely played well enough to like establish himself as a backup for a long time. Yeah. I hope, I don't know what fans would be saying, but I hope the team is not knee-jerk enough to be like, react to just the bucket or just the second half of the Falcons game, be like, maybe this is our franchise quarterback now. It's like, let's let him have a few more big games.
No, I mean, this is at least the way that it looks right now, unless PJ Walker falls off a major cliff. I think they're just going to be paying Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold like $24 million combined to just sit on the bench and watch PJ Walker try to win a starting job. I think that's the goal at this point. Like he gives you the best chance to win, but you also can't really like fault them for, you know, playing somebody like him when they're also angling for a top pick.
I mean, they just owe it to him and he just deserves to start because he's earned it. Like he's been so much better than Baker or Sam for the last, like for what they've put out there for the last year.
Right.
PJ Walker's just been better and you can't not give him the job. If you want any credibility in the locker room, like if Steve Wilks is like, oh, Baker's back, head on back out there, Baker or Sam. No one in the locker room respects him.
No, I mean, like,
yeah.
Even in the preseason, like, Walker looked like the most competent quarterback on the roster. And for me as an at-home viewer, I was like, well, maybe it's just because he knows the offense better and he's got the rapport with these guys and maybe he's not as good. But no, very clearly head and shoulders playing much better than those guys, even with the ups and downs of his performance, like the first couple quarters of the Falcons game. So
I think with the ups and downs, you say at least there are ups.
Right. Right. You get the 63-yard completion at the end of the game where he fucking rocketed it to DJ Moore, threw it exactly where it had to go. Like, it was just a beautiful throw. It sucks that he lost this game because I feel like even despite the struggles in the first and second quarter, this was still a better quarterback game than even last week. And last week was a very good quarterback game by him.
Yeah. No, he's put together a couple of good weeks. And I think you ride it out as long. I mean, Sam and Baker are not going to be the answers. So I don't really know why you bother going back to them.
No. Especially since the head coach is gone and allegedly Sam Darnold was his little baby, I guess. Like he was angling for Sam Darnold even before the draft of 2021, which I still
I'll only take the job if you can get Sam Darnold in that building. I don't care what it takes. I will not coach your team unless Sam Darnold's my quarterback.
I do find it funny that the report that came out on that was basically, I think it was Scott Fowler. But Sam Darnold, or not Sam Darnold, Matt Rule basically harassed everyone until they gave up and were like, fine, we'll trade for him. Like,
hey, I mean, you know, that's what you got to do. Also, I love that whenever someone gets fired, all these things come out like immediately, like people are sitting on these stories for so long.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, I'm so excited to finally be able to share this.
To share how much of an idiot this guy was. Like, yeah. But speaking of coaching moves and transactions, the Panthers didn't trade anybody this week. I wasn't shocked by it. I'm not going to lie. I think that the national media loves to jump on these narratives that teams are in fire sale mode and they're going to trade a good player. And the Rams allegedly offered a 2024 and 2025 first round pick. When I first read that report, they didn't include that part, which maybe they didn't know. But if it had been a 2023 first round pick and a 2024 first round pick, I might have been okay with it. But two first round picks in the future when you don't even really have an idea of what direction that team is going to go in for Brian Burns. That seems like, seems bad.
Yeah.
At least not
for
a team in this position.
Yeah. I think people get a little carried away in like what entails like being a seller or what being a seller entails. Where like, just because you're bad this year doesn't mean you trade all of your good players like without consideration for anything, right? Like, the Christian McCaffrey trade made sense because he's a 26-year-old running back that's way overpriced. Not overpriced for his value, but, like, it's a huge allocation of resources to a position that doesn't typically have good return on investment. And he's presumably on a down slope of his career. That's a player that you get value for when you're on a bad team. You don't necessarily do that for players that you're capable of re-signing past their current deals for good value, right? Like, Brian Burns is 24 years old and is going to be, like, he's a priority to keep going forward. So, like, you don't get rid of those guys. You get rid of, like, the guys that have, like, 1 or 2 years left on your team. You just get them, you get rid of them earlier.
And Brian Burns also plays a premium position. Like, if you ship him off, you still got to replace him. You'll probably spend one of those first round picks on a edge rusher, and you hope he's as good as they are, or you hope that person is as good as Brian Burns is. But the fact that he's 24 will probably sign a pretty long extension this offseason to be their premier pass rusher alongside Derek Brown. Like, at this point, the Panthers are in a position where they need to build around their franchise centerpieces, which right now are DJ Moore, Brian Burns, Derek Brown, Ekwonu, Moten. You know, like, they have decent enough pieces. This is not like the dumpster fire 1-win or 0-win Detroit Lions or Jaguars where they have no talent and they're just kind of trying to angle for a full rebuild. Like, this is, they're going to rebuild, but it's not in the sense where they need to find those cornerstones for their franchise. They have them. They have a few of them. They have an opportunity to get more of them.
Right.
So there were way too many games that I've watched so far this year where the Panthers were playing well. Like last year when they were struggling and getting destroyed in the second half of the season, that's when I would have been like, yeah, fire sale, kill, like, send everyone out. Where this year it's like, you can see the positives. You can see what they're what Matt Rhule was trying to build. You can see some kind of vision with it. It's just they didn't have the right people at the top to manage it.
Right. So, you see, like, where that foundation, you see the foundation, right? Like, you see, like, okay, like, there are pieces, there are guys here that are good that can get that, you know, we should keep around for a while, and they can be the focal point of a good team in a couple years. And so there's no reason to offload them to try to replace them immediately.
And on top of that, they need to be an attractive place for a new head coach.
Right. Yeah.
You don't need to be hiring the next Urban Meyer, you know?
Yeah, you don't want to be in a place that looks like a setup for failure.
Right. So I'm okay with the direction they're going in.
Yeah. No, I thought that was I didn't expect the Panthers to be super active. I definitely didn't expect them. They're definitely not going to trade for anybody.
Right.
And I didn't think there was going to be any trade outside of maybe something on the peripheries that was like very minor. But the star players, I felt like Christian McCaffrey was the only one that made sense. So
he did, and he deserves to go win with someone else. Like,
and he had an okay. He set an okay start with the 49ers.
Yeah. You know, he only threw a touchdown, ran for a touchdown, and caught a touchdown.
Yeah, that's all he's done in one game. Yeah.
Yeah. He's the only player in the NFL who has a perfect passer rating on passes 20 yards down the field.
I saw that he has as many 30 air yard completions outside the numbers as a 49er as Jimmy Garoppolo.
Oh, wow.
It was something like that.
That's hilarious.
It was something. There were a couple things that are like where if you do that 30 air yard kind of filter, that Christian McCaffrey is like equal to or better than Jimmy Garoppolo in terms of like either the same at like something along those lines. Like I said, I think it was the only like Jimmy Garoppolo has never thrown a 30-yard air yard pass that was completed outside the numbers or something like that. For
at this point, you should just bench Garoppolo and put McCaffrey at quarterback. Be a pretty devastating combo with Deebo Samuel.
Yeah, just do the Deebo, just do that Wildcat all the time. Yep. I don't know how. I think it would with Kyle Shanahan and those two guys, I think it would work. Like you could have a middling offense only running the ball with those two players and like Wildcat type plays.
Absolutely. But speaking of offenses, so the Panthers are going to face a pretty good one despite down Jamar Chase in the Bengals this week. I'm not really sure how I feel about this matchup yet.
It's one of the weird, it's just an AFC. It's always tough with the AFC games because we see those teams so infrequently. It just doesn't, like Panthers Bengals just like doesn't look right.
No, it doesn't. And they're kind of in the same situation the Panthers were last year, except, having Joe Burrow, where their offensive line is such shit that that it kind of like brings down everybody on the offense. Like, even without Jamar Chase, T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd, what the fuck? Their tight end. He was the Falcons guy. What was his name?
Hayden Hurst?
Yeah, Hayden Hurst. Like, that's not a bad top three for a franchise quarterback like Joe.
Oh, no, their skill positions are crazy. And, like, Joe Mixon, running back, and all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, like, they have a solid offense. And their defense is kind of in the same situations as Panthers right now, where their corners are just all dealing with injuries and they have some defensive linemen out. So we might be looking at a PJ Walker, Joe Burrow shootout. That's kind of what I'm looking at right now, which would be hilarious. It could be, I don't know. I mean, unless the Bengals offense just destroys the Panthers defense and really gets ahead. Like, I think we could be seeing another 30-30 type game. I'm sure the Panthers will lose because that's what they do, but, I think it'll be fun.
The Bengals' defense, though, has been better than I think you'd expect.
Oh, no, I expect them to be good. I read Walker's 5 questions with the enemy this week, and they basically are in the same position as the Panthers, minus the fact that they're missing two of their starting, not even starting, but they're two of their best run-blocking defensive linemen, which is not a good recipe for success against a team that is going to run Deontay Foreman down your throat. So that's where I'm, not sure how this game's going to go. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the Panthers will get dominated. I mean, they did go to the Super Bowl last year.
Yeah, well, they also got blown out by the Browns last week, which is never, a good momentum builder. But I found what I was looking for. They gave up 3 touchdowns in the second half to the Browns on Monday night. Do you know how many second half touchdowns they had allowed this year before that?
What, 0?
Yes.
Wow, that's pretty good.
Well, yeah, they went week 1 through 7. They did not allow a single touchdown in the second half of games. So
that's concerning.
Now they gave up 3 to the Browns, and the Browns are bad. So,
they bad though?
They're
in the top 5 in like every offensive category right now. I don't know if you knew that.
I did not really. I guess that's true. But I guess I just think of the Browns as like all the losses they had consecutively. But but still, they gave up 3 touchdowns on Monday night and they got beat pretty thoroughly. Maybe there's some cracks in the armor there. And because I think you see this a lot with football, where a lot of times units can be somewhat fragile, especially defensively, where a team can be really strong defensively. And all it takes is like one bad game and it all unravels as soon as the players start to lose trust in the system and stuff like that. That's always possible here, but I think it's more likely that the Bengals are just kind of a disjointed mess on offense, and the Panthers struggle with that defense, especially in the second half, and we end up with another ugly, like, we revert back to what we had before, this random outbreak of offensive football that we saw against the Falcons.
Now, I mean, to be fair, the Falcons and the Buccaneers are both dealing with a lot of major injuries missing in the secondary, so that's always conducive to passing the ball well.
Yeah, and Atlanta is also one of the worst defenses in the league, regardless.
Yeah.
So, like, they're, yeah, like, both against the run and the pass. Like, it's basically, like, them and the Lions and the Texans are the worst defenses in the league. So, I don't know if I would expect such an outburst against the Bengals.
Oh. That was just me just kind of, like, thinking or breathing it into existence, because I would enjoy that more than a 7-10 where I'm just sitting there like struggling to enjoy the Panthers, because the last couple games I've really enjoyed the Panthers offense, where, you know, the weeks into the season, aside from that one Saints game, the offense was just hard to watch and frustrating and made me angry.
Yeah, I think there's a good chance we see that again, but I'm obviously always on board with if you're going to lose, at least lose by scoring points. Scoring points, right? Like, the games are just so much... At least you get to, like, enjoy some things and cheer for some things, as opposed to just, like, watching punts over and over and over again.
Yeah, punts, interceptions, fumbles. Like, still, it's better to just watch Deontay Foreman score three touchdowns, or even just be as successful as he has been over the last couple games, than to just lament the fact that this season is happening and there's nothing we can do about it.
Nothing we can do about the season.
No, nothing. But this is definitely a game where the Panthers are going to see the Bengals. Probably they're going to get the Bengals all, because this is the get right for game for them. They have the Panthers, then they have the bye week. They're just trying to get back into being competitive. So this is the game where they're going to get. The Bengals are going to come after them, so it'll be a nice test to see exactly how good this team is with a team as talented as the Bengals coming after them this week. I mean, the Buccaneers are, in theory, supposed to be a really good team, but they're not playing like one, and the Falcons are a team, I think, playing above their heads, where this is the team that played in the Super Bowl last year. So this, I think this is going to be a really good gauge for where exactly the Panthers are talent-wise, even if Dante Jackson and some of their other defensive backs don't play.
You remember how last week I used, like, the transitive property about, like, the Falcons destroyed the 49ers and the Panthers lost to the 49ers, so Panthers had, like, no shot?
Mm-hmm.
We have a similar situation here where the Bengals shredded the Falcons 2 weeks ago.
Yep.
So, like, Joe Burrow had, like, 350 yards passing in the first half or something absurd like that. And they just kind of cruised to a win after that point. So, not super encouraging in that, like, in that regard. And also, a little fun fact, did you know Joe Burrow is leading the league in passing yards?
No, but that doesn't surprise me at all.
No, it kind of surprised me, because it's kind of snuck up on us. Like, I would have guessed like Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes or somebody, which they're both in the top five, but I did not think Joe Burrow would have like a commanding lead in the passing yardage race.
Yeah, it's just a shame that he's stuck on a team that's defense. Well, I guess, like you said, their defense is better, but the fact that he's stuck on a team where their offensive line is not great, but I do know that part of the issue with the offensive line is also that Burrow likes to extend plays and kind of go into backyard football mode, and that's usually conducive to sacks. I mean, I watched Cam Newton play here for God knows how many years, so it happens.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the Bengals are probably better than they're given credit for this year, just because, like, they're 4-4, and they've had some gross losses, but, like, I think they're, like, their general, like, big picture play has been good. They just kind of had some stinker games. And like you
Which
said,
happens.
I think it's, Yeah, like you said, I think it's the Panthers are in a tough spot, and like you said, being the get right game, right? Like, they're coming off a bad loss to the Browns. They have a bye week after this, so there's nothing to like look ahead to. So it's like, all right, guys, let's go out there, let's take care of business, let's like beat up on the Panthers, and then we get a week off before we come back for the second half of the season. So I think the Panthers' big chance or best chance for success for most of the rest of the year is kind of like catching people off guard, right? Like being penciled in as a win on the schedule, and then like coming out of nowhere with some moxie, like they did against the Buccaneers, and being and just like catching teams kind of off guard with like, oh yeah, I forgot that just because they're not good doesn't mean they're all like not they're not all professional football players that can actually play well. Isolate. Not that they can only like they can play, you know, they can beat anybody on any given day.
Yeah, I mean, between Frankie Louvu, Shaq Thompson, Brian Burns, defensive tackle. Why is his name escaping me now? Derek Brown. There we go. I was gonna call him Derek Jackson. I was like, no, that's not right. Between those four players, on any given play, they could blow up the entire offense. So, I like it. It's a good position to be in for a team that's rebuilding. Because you, I think it was Andrew who said this, or Mick Smiley, for those of you who read the show or read the blog. But he basically said that, and then I stopped myself too. Figure out what I was going to say. Shit. no, he basically said that that you don't want to lose too much and create a losing culture. You want to kind of have that established mentality of winning football games, even if you're struggling. And I think that's what they're doing right now. They're kind of conditioning the team to shoot for being a winning football team and to be competitive in every game. Something we didn't see from last year's second half of the season with Matt Rhule. So I just want to see them come out and being competitive in every game. They have the talent to do so. So that's kind of where I'm at with it.
Yeah, I think it's like, players aren't dumb. And players, I mean, then you can generally, they're realistic, right? Like, you can be bad, but if you're competitive and your team is built a certain way, like, players can get that same optimism that fans do, right? Where it's just like, okay, I mean, yeah, we went 4-13 this year, but we played good football and we had some tough breaks and we just got to get more experience and we'll be good. You know, like, I think you can get players to buy into that if the team is playing well, if the team still steals some wins and they give themselves a chance to win on a semi-consistent basis, as opposed to if you're just like showing up and like punching the clock to get demolished every Sunday. It's just like, what are we even doing here? And I don't think it's hard to build a culture that way.
Yeah. I think you kind of want that established culture in the locker room when you bring in the new head coach, because at least it's a little less work at that point because they are kind of bought in. Yeah, like they still have to buy into the new head coach's idea for the future. But when the team is conditioned to be like, we're going to go out there and try to win every Sunday, we can win every game, that's the kind of mentality you want. So I think that it's gonna shape up to be a good situation for whatever the next head coach is.
Right.
Whether it's Steve Wilkes or not.
Right. It's like, all right, we're close. Now it's like this is this guy. Like, this guy can like help push us over the top because we almost had it last year despite all the turmoil.
Yep.
So.
Exactly. You want to get into scoring predictions, John?
Yeah, let's go for it. Let me pull up my random number generator.
Yep. So, go ahead.
Do you want to update the standings? We haven't talked about the standings in a couple of weeks.
Let's see here. So, I got to do this. So, RNG was... Oh, let me get my thing here. RNG.
We worry about it. Oh, good.
I would say RNG picked the first week correctly. RNG and myself picked the second week correctly, so that's 2-1. RNG and myself picked the third week correctly. Or no, excuse me, you did. So that was 2-1-1. Then I picked the fourth week correctly. So that's 2-1-2, or 2-2-1. The RNG was wrong week five. So that's 2-2-2. We were tied up. You were the only one who picked the Rams. So that one, that puts you at 3-2-2. We were all wrong about the Bucks, so you were still 3-2-2. And you were correct about the Falcons as well, so that puts you at 4-2-2, John. You are leading the standings.
I'm really good at this.
Mm-hmm.
So what? I get to go last. Oh, I'll go first then. I'm going to say Bengals 26. Panthers 19.
I'd be okay with that game.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Bengals 35, Panthers 21.
Okay, you are going with the shootout again.
Yep. I think it's going to happen.
Right now, by the way, the spread is Bengals minus 7.5.
Yep.
And the over-under is 42.5, so that's like roughly actually really close to what my score was. It's like 25-18, basically. Anyway, random number generator says Panthers 13, Bengals 14.
Wow.
That'd be a very Panthers-Bengals game.
It would be, considering...
I mean, we tied them a few years ago.
Yeah, I was going to say, wasn't that the last time the Panthers faced off against the Bengals? Was the tie
game? No, we tied them in 2014 in the 7-8. They were the one in the 7-8-1 year.
Yeah.
So, and that was that game
that
was like
the last game they faced each other, though, right?
No, 2018.
Oh yeah, they did play each other in 2018. Yeah, forgot.
The Panthers won, with four touchdowns from Cam Newton.
Yeah, they won handily, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it's 31-21. But Christian McCaffrey had 184 yards rushing. So, but yeah, the I remember the 2014 game was very similar to the Falcons game, this past Sunday. It was like a very similar thing of just like both teams repeatedly making mistakes at the end of the game to try to let the other team win, and like a bunch of like missed kicks and bad plays and stuff. And then it's just like, yeah. Oh, we're out of time. I think the Bengals missed a game. They missed a similar field goal to what we did against the Falcons. Like they missed like a chip shot field goal as time expired, which is such a funny thing to happen because like the Panthers have 0% chance of winning. So it's just like, if he makes it, we lose. If we miss it, we tie. And so he, when he misses it, everybody's like, yeah, we didn't lose.
Yeah.
Because it's like the best possible outcome at the moment. Yeah. Mike Nugent missed a 36 yard field goal on the final play of overtime.
I kind of hope the Panthers tie every game to end the season. That'd be pretty cool.
That would be funny. I'd also kind of be curious as how that makes the records work out.
They should just make the playoffs at that point.
Yeah,
they're half good enough, you know.
right.
Yeah.
And then they have an infinite playoff game that never ends.
Yep. Then they just make it to the Super Bowl because they can't figure out the tiebreakers. So, yeah. Ugh, but. Hopefully this will be a fun game to watch. I mean, the last 2 weeks have been fun. The Steve Wilks era so far has been decent. Much better than I would have expected, considering they fired their head coach only a few weeks into the season. So I'm enjoying letting him audition, and I won't be upset if he gets the head coaching job next year when he can assemble his own staff instead of having to inherit Ben McAdoo and all of Matt Rule's people. So, but... Was there anything else you wanted to add, John?
No, I think that's it. Just looking forward to another fun weekend of Carolina Panthers football.
Yeah. If it's a fun weekend, I won't be able to complain too much. But
right.
From all of us here at the Keep Sounding Podcast, this is Brian, joined by John as always. Stay tuned, stay safe, stay healthy, and we'll be back with you next week.